Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their expertise, and their insights so that you can help grow your business. My name is Gary Lafferty, your host and the co-founder of Growth Focus Partnerships, where we help tech leaders not only grow their relationships, but meet better relationships, help them close more sales, and also help them become the authority in their niche. I'm really looking forward to today's episode. Today, we're going to be talking about how do we pivot, how to zig, how to zag, why not always following the path set out for you is the right path for you, and also how to change your idea on how business growth is done. So without further ado, I can't wait to introduce my guest to you. So Ray, welcome to the show. It's an absolute honor to have you here today. Why don't we start off by you introducing a little bit about yourself, who you are, and what is it that you do?
Gary, thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat. I'm Ray Lambert. Started my career in finance, broke into tech in 2012, pivoted into marketing, accidentally started a software company and took some investment, and now I'm the co-founder and CEO of River.
Right. Well, I can't wait to delve a little bit more into that, so get people to know you. So let's start by dialing back again. Like, as you said, you didn't start off in the traditional route. You didn't start off in tech. You started off in finance, you know. So, you know, if you started in finance, what pulled you away from that world and into the setup, into the startup scene?
I hated it. I absolutely hated it. Also, I feel like the finance maybe was the traditional role and then tech is the untraditional role, at least where I'm from the Northeast. You know, I didn't have a ton of like people who were really successful in my life, but the people I did, they were like teachers or doctors or lawyers or like finance people. And I actually grew up quite poor and I just wanted a surefire job. So I was like, okay, knowing how to manage money seemed like a good idea. You know, I did okay. I got like pretty good grades and I got a job right out of school, but it just became really clear right away that it just was not the right career for me. I had coworkers who'd read the entire Wall Street Journal before they got to work. And I was like, God, no, I don't want that for myself. So, you know, I slogged for a while until I started kind of lifting my head up and looking for other things to do.
So tech. So this is the thing. You could have gone, like you said, that there are so many other careers out there. Knowing finance wasn't one of them. When did you realize that startups was where you belong?
After I already got a job at one, because I didn't really know what to expect. My husband and I were both, I was in finance and he was in mechanical engineering in the Boston area. And he read The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. And he was like, Rachel, you got to read this book. I read this book. He was like very serious. He's like, as soon as you're done with this book, we're going to meet at a coffee shop and we're going to go talk about this book. So we had a meeting about this book and we realized that's, you know, because Tim Ferriss talks about angel investing in Silicon Valley. And we're like, what is Silicon Valley? What's an angel investor? We started digging in. It just seemed kind of just like a place where people could be really creative and less rigidity in the types of work you're doing. So we started applying for jobs, but we were very young in our career. No one had any interest in flying us out for an interview. So we decided, you know what, we just had to be there. So I actually hated my job more than he hated his. So I gave up mine and I went to San Francisco for 1 month. And the agreement was if I could get a job in an apartment, then he would give up his job in Boston and he would follow me out. So I actually got a bartending job first, then he followed me out. Then we started applying tech jobs and I got an operations role at an early stage startup. Had no idea what I was walking into. I showed up like dressed up, like what I thought was dressed down for an interview, which was a pencil skirt, like high heels, a blouse. And I walk in to this startup. It's like, first of all, I don't think the floor had ever been vacuumed. People were barefoot, like at standing desks in like shorts. It was like, where am I? What am I doing here? But I somehow got the job and I just loved how dynamic it was. Changing every single day compared to like a rigid finance job in Boston. I was just like, wow, I'm in heaven. I don't even care if I don't like today because tomorrow's going to be different.
Well, that's a fascinating story. And I'm talking about not a linear path about your career. But before we move on to building River, et cetera, I've got one more question for you because you just brought that up. You know, you walked into a startup, dressed down, as you would call it, in your pencil skirt. So there's been a lot of not just, you know, career changes, there's a lot of mindset shifts as well. You've gone from employee to consultant to founder. So what is the mindset shift that you think is required to start doing these leaps and zigging and zagging all the way through until you find where you're meant to be?
Yeah, I hear a lot of people talk about risk and they're worried about the downside, but I don't often hear people thinking about upside. And, you know, one thing I did learn in finance was like compound interest and how little gains can grow over time. And yeah, I felt like, you know what, I'm reasonably smart and I'm really hardworking. Like I know that about myself, that whatever shortcoming I have on intelligence or just education or something, I can make up for in like raw horsepower of just like, I can grind and work really hard. So I think sometimes people overestimate the downside risk and they underestimate the upside, because so many times in my career, I've like lifted my head up, looked around and been like, oh, 6 months ago, I never could have imagined the universe providing me with this opportunity. And then, you know, then you look 6 years later or 10 years later, 20 years later, and just things are just, you don't have enough imagination to think about how different and how good things could be. So you just have to kind of follow your excitement and operate with hard work and integrity and just keep saying yes. And you like literally can't even imagine where you'll end up.
Yeah, I love that. You follow your excitement. People often say follow your passion, whatever. But actually there is this fire sometimes, isn't it? Well, there should be a fire and you should follow that excitement. Yeah. Of, you know, every morning I'm great. This is what I'm going to do. And I love that when it talks about it. So let's talk about river. So we've heard about your, you know, nonlinear path, jumping from barmaid to founder. So for those who don't know what River does, can you explain to us what is it the problem that River solves and who is it built for?
Yeah, and I could just make a quick comment. So I pivoted into startups and I was kind of working still in a finance operations role. I was helping with fundraising. I found office space, like just all the things it takes to kind of run a company. But then I further pivoted again into product marketing at a company called Intercom, which is now pretty well known. At the time, it was extremely early stage company. Back then, like I still interviewed with the CEO. The company was so small. And then I found like, oh, I'm excited about coming to work every day because I was in marketing. It was much more creative work. You know, if maybe in hindsight, maybe I should have done something more creative in my education. Although I like what I studied because it just helps me run my business now. But anyway, what I mean to say is my life has been a series of pivots, not just like one big one. After I left Intercom, I co-founded a product marketing agency. And there I was working with huge tech companies, ServiceNow, LinkedIn, Mercury, Meta, and helping them take products to market and just like learned a lot about like the big company energy and what it takes to kind of move big organizations and reposition companies. For example, like after Silicon Valley Bank had a bank run, Mercury Bank reached out to my team to help them like rethink their personas because now all of a sudden they had all these new types of customers that they hadn't dealt with before. So kind of like abandoned early stage companies, but also consulted for really, really big companies and just kind of seeing the breadth of that. So we can talk about that eventually. I was living in Miami. So I've lived in San Francisco, New York, and Miami and Boston as like my big cities. I was living in Miami, not really enjoying quite who I was meeting at the tech meetups. It was a lot of crypto people, which, you know, I own crypto and I'm like totally interested in the space, but it was not the only thing I wanted to talk about. So, and I had been to the All In Podcast Summit earlier that year and enjoyed who I met there. So when I got to Miami, I was like, let me see if I can meet more of those people. I ended up hosting a listening party for me in Miami. And then my sign up form went viral and we hosted meetups in 24 cities. And, you know, I didn't think much of it. 6 months later, everyone wanted to do it again. We ended up hosting meetups in 50 cities. I just could not believe how viral this little community went. And along the way, I was really struggling to find an event platform that would scale with us. So Jason Calacanis, the founder, the moderator of the podcast, and he also has This Week in Startups as his second podcast, he tried to hire me to work for him. And I was like, well, I'm running a product marketing agency that's doing about $2 million a year in revenue with no meetings on Fridays. I don't think I want to kind of like be an event manager for you. Even though I love Jason, it could have been a cool opportunity. I turned it down. And a few weeks later, he offered me $100,000 to build River, which didn't have a name at the time. But now I'm building River, which is an event platform. And we operate a little bit differently from other event tools. We are a little bit more like Uber. On Uber, drivers bring their own car. On River, hosts bring their own venue. So we really can power grassroots like community meetups at a much larger scale than any of the other event tools.
That's really interesting, you know, and I'm going to delve more into that as we go on today. So Who is your ideal client? You know, so let's break it down. What is a problem that River solves for people? Because obviously, if you can solve a bigger problem as opposed to just being product led or service led, when there's an actual bleeding neck problem, or I heard today, what was it? Hair on fire problem. I think I heard
hair on fire.
Hair on fire problem. So what is the problems that you see that River solves, and predominantly who has these problems?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're kind of a B2B2C. So we have two main customers. So we work with really big influencers, as it's kind of like what we're known for. Anyone who has a huge audience that wants to get their kind of community or their members together in person, but doesn't really have the firepower to do that, because it actually takes a ton of manpower to plan and execute all of these events. But instead, the River platform orchestrates and automates, like basically activating your membership group or your audience or your community to do some of the work of hosting for you. So Brian Johnson, he's kind of well known in the health space, kind of pretty like interesting guy, getting a lot of attention. He's basically starting a religion, the Don't Die religion. And in order to do that, he wanted to connect people in person. He was using Discord to do that. No one was really getting together. I think maybe they had like 10, 20 meetups that happened. When we launched on River, because we crowdsourced the host from the community, 3 weeks after he announced, 110 meetups happened on the same day with like 7,000 attendees. So it's just like a order of magnitude scale that no one is used to. And to be honest, we're so early. We're still figuring out who wants to use this, but like, a political campaign could use it to have small, like grassroots fundraisers, like private dinner party fundraisers, or Mr. Beast could send all of his like Gen Z followers to do park cleanup projects. You know, it's just like whoever wants to activate their audience. I've been talking with one customer. They are like an AI language learning tool, and they have like 8 million users around the world. And these people want to practice English together. So they could use River to help people get together regularly without hiring, you know, a whole army of event people to plan it.
Really interesting. It's almost, yeah, I just love the fact, I love the way you say it's just like events, but it's like an Uber event thing. You know, it's brilliant. Just bringing those two different people together and then mass scaling it out there to, you know, for the benefit. That's absolutely great. So let's talk about acquiring clients. You know, you've got a great marketing background. You know what works. You know what doesn't work. If you were to say in the tech industry now, I mean, the tech people aren't necessarily known for their marketing. You know, they're not great at being in the limelight. What do you think works right now in tech that is really beneficial for tech users when it comes to getting users or clients?
Yeah, well, I will say I think there's a huge shift happening in the tech industry in general, where, you know, with all these no-code tools and all these AI tools helping you write code, I think we're going to see a huge emergence of go-to-market founders rather than software engineer founders, just because, you know, people who are really great at writing code tend to not be great storytellers and not be great at building an audience and like selling. And I think a lot of them are kind of underestimate that skill. They'll, you know, they worked along like at a company with a sales team and they kind of ignored them for years on end. They could have been like building friendships or learning a little something, but, you know, instead they're just like, no, you know. I will say like salespeople know that writing code is hard. I'm not sure that people who write code know that sales is hard because they just like they never tried it. And they're like, what do you mean? It's just meetings. And then I'll also say, I think a lot of the alpha is gone before you hear about a tactic online because people are just not sharing what's working for them right away. They wait until they've kind of exploited a tactic and then they'll like go and share more. I would say for River, what's working well is I'm just hunting wolves kind of like a handful at a time. I tried some like outbound email, you know, some mail merge, some like Apollo Clay stuff. I just think email outbound is just, people have spam filters on. It's just really hard to get them to care. For me, you know, I kind of go after big influencers one at a time or five at a time. And I just try to make sure that I'm completely dialed into what they're doing so that I can be timely and relevant when I do finally pitch them. Mm-hmm. It's much easier for me to pitch and connect with someone and get them to respond to a DM on Twitter if I know them, if I kind of know their content intimately. But someone random, it's like extremely hard to kind of find an in. So for me, hunting people really relevantly, I just think like, got to create a lot of content. And I just think also relationships, like long-term relationships can, you don't really realize the network you're building until you start, extracting or like needing from it. I realize Yeah, sometimes I think relationship building just in general is like extremely powerful go-to-market strategy that no one really talks about. But being a trusted source, and that's either by meeting people in person or creating content. Yeah, but I don't have like a winning tactic. I don't have like one like bullet in the gun for you that's just like going to work.
Yeah, yeah. I think that there is so much, and I'm glad you talk, because no one really talks about what doesn't work. And I break the mold a little bit. I do believe email marketing can work if done right, but a lot of people get it wrong. And one of the big reasons, and I'll say right now, one of the big reasons why most people get email marketing wrong, whether you use Apollo, whether you use Clay or whatever, is you try and pitch from the outgo. You haven't built, as you would say, a relationship yet. You haven't given anything back yet. You're just trying to blast your product or your service out there. And that's why most people will say email marketing doesn't work. But that being said, relationships are important. And I think more and more people need to understand that relationships are long-term. The relationships aren't a quick, hey, I get to know you, now can I pitch you? It's people need to understand that relationships can and will work, are very, very powerful, as you quite rightly said. But relationships take time. You know, can rush it, but you know, it is the quality of the relationship that you need to ask yourself, what do you want out of this relationship, and how good do you want this relationship to be?
And you never know where like leads are going to come from or where something's going to come from. So, you know, we had been kind of talking with a group called Late Checkout, and they kind of work in the indie SaaS like creator space. And we were trying to talk about a partnership, and we all liked each other, but we weren't really sure where this was going to go. And I wouldn't say it like fizzled out, but we just didn't quite like find something actionable to latch onto, you know, but still it was like really nice getting to know them. And I was like, oh, eventually we'll kind of circle back or something. I didn't really think much of it. And then the other day I got an email that's like, hey, Ray, someone wants to run the world's largest hackathon. I think River would be perfect for this. Thanks, bye. And like, you know, I don't want to reveal too much about the plans, but like, the juicy plans, and it'd be so cool to be part of that. And it just like came from someone that, you know, we had a couple conversations with like whatever, 6 months ago. I don't know. So you kind of never know like where what relationships like will end up being valuable. And so if you just kind of offer like help, give first, like have a give first mentality, show up on time, show up when you say you're going to show up, you know, be polite, be respectful, try to make connections wherever you can, and just like good things happen. I mean, you could call it karma, or you could just say like law of large numbers. I don't know.
Do you know what I call it? I call it common sense. But as you well know, Ray, common sense and common practice are two different things.
Yeah.
You know, everyone knows that's what they do. Everyone should know they should say what they mean and mean what they say and be polite. And that, but it doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. And this is one of the challenges that they wonder why they're not standing out. So that leads us nicely into what you were saying earlier about standing out. And tech leaders aren't great at being in the spotlight. They're not great at necessarily writing content or producing content. You've been building in the public. That's what you are really good at, is making sure that you're putting yourself out there. In your mind, how important is founder-led marketing, and how has it been a lever puller for River's growth?
Yeah, I mean, I founder-led sales, founder-led marketing, I don't really see another way. The founder is the one who has all the insights about the product and about the market, and really hopefully you're building a problem you personally have. And so I just don't really see how you can outsource that. I definitely think you can help operationalize, like find contractors, like get an event, you know, a video editor, you know, ask ChatGPT to like help you write tweets, like whatever you got to do to operationalize yourself. But I really think the ideas and the voice needs to come from you. A lot of founders I see, and I don't even have that big of a following, like I haven't been focused on it that much. I don't know, I've got like 7,000 Twitter LinkedIn followers and like 4,000 or 5,000 Twitter followers. And it's never been like, I'm going to set myself on like a crazy schedule. And like, I tweet when I think of it. I post whenever I think of it. I do see a lot of people getting in their own way, being like, oh, is this a good enough tweet? Is this a good enough? Like they're really worried about quality. And I'm like, well, at the beginning, no one's paying attention. Like no one's going to see it anyway. And quality comes from reps. Like you have to put in the reps, or you're just not going to get the quality. And you're just going to get you won't develop an intuition. And then you also can't develop your voice. Because I think that's another thing, is like, especially if you ask ChatGPT to write all your tweets, they're just going to be boring and generic. And so sometimes, you know, if I'm ever like, is this too spicy? I'm like, you know what? Send it. And if somebody like calls me out, maybe I'll delete it. I delete a lot of tweets and a lot of posts. Like if something doesn't land, I just like, I usually delete it and try to rework it, usually because the idea is good, but the delivery wasn't quite right. Or I posted it like BM on a Friday night and it's just like bad timing, or, you know, sometimes it's just about timing. Yeah. So I think, you know, building yourself a brand, putting yourself out there, but then I just feel like these things, like, they come back to you tenfold. So like, I was just in Austin for South by Southwest and I was sitting at like kind of a counter bar brunch area. And someone came up and was like, oh my God, hi, Rain. I was like, hi, Adele. And the bartender was like, oh, do you guys know each other? How do you know each other? And we're like, Twitter? We know each other from Twitter? Like, how random. Yeah. And I also find Twitter to be, I mean, I know some LinkedIn works better for some people, but I just find the barrier to Twitter to be extremely low. Like, I don't know, people just like respond to my DMs, like huge people with huge followings, like they'll respond. So I think in certain mediums, the barrier is down. Especially if you're not coming out like pitching people right away. You can just be a reply guy for a while and build quite a bit of credibility that way.
I think that's a great way. I think that's a great insight there, is be the reply guy, you know, and do the replies and just let people come to you for that. And that's where you're going to, you know, start getting some really good traction on that. So that being said, Ray, you know, you've worked with some of the biggest names in SaaS throughout your career. What in your mind, what do in your eyes do both early and late stage companies often get wrong about their GTM, yeah, the go-to-market?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of, actually, we helped launch, it was like a long time ago now, so I think it's okay to talk about, but ServiceNow, they were trying to launch a new product that was competing with PagerDuty. And they were designing and building product for like 2 years before they started forming the go-to-market team to launch the product. Hey, this is a huge mistake, because I'm a huge fan of the Amazon press release style of product development, where you write the press release before you spec out the product and before you write any code. And basically the exercise is, what do we want to be able to say about this product? What's differentiated about this product? What problem does this product solve? And defining that before you start building product. Because what happens sometimes if you're just trying to build like a replica of a product, you end up with like no differentiation and no specific insight, that the only thing you can compete on is price. And, you know, Gary Vee always says, never compete on price, you know. And so I think that they built for 2 years, they didn't come up with a go-to-market team. So then we come in and we're like, okay, like, what's the story? What's the message? And we just like can't find anything to sink our teeth into. So we end up being like free for 6 months, you know, and just like kind of relying on the fact that you're already a ServiceNow customer to get you to switch over. The problem is, this is like a fire alarm system, PagerDuty, for people. It is like, it's like quite a serious thing to kind of like rip out and like put back in. And it's kind of one of those things like, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Like, you're not necessarily trying to optimize further. You're just like, I just need the fire alarm to go off when there's a fire and that's it. So I think ultimately the product ended up getting shut down. But that was just like such a big learning for me on like the big stage, because I initially learned this at Intercom, where I was working, and we were launching a new help center product for the very first time, competing. At the time, Zendesk was the huge incumbent. Everyone was using Zendesk, and Intercom did not have a knowledge base like help center product. And we did the press release first. We're like, what do we want to say about this? We want it, and, you know, we will let that story inform the product. So we decided we wanted it to be the most intelligent and like most feedback loop help center, like where there's no kind of dead ends. And basically, anytime someone asks a question from the help center, you use that question they had to reinforce the content you have in the knowledge base, so that it reduces someone having a question the next time. So we start with the story we want to tell. We give ourselves a deadline to build a product. And because we are so focused on the story, we actually had a ton of features that you would think we should have. For example, we did not have nested lists. So you could have bullets, but you couldn't have like a tabbed in bullet. We just like didn't build it. And you could, I think maybe you could do bullet, like bold and italics, but there were no headlines and there were no tables. You couldn't like insert a table. So it was just like images and like headlines. Or not headlines, just like bold. I don't know. The formatting was like lacking, big lacking. But turns out like no one cared. And we got to the product to like 5 million ARR within like 4 months, I think, because we just like weren't focused on the like the things that seem like everyone has it. But it was just like, so yeah, we just like skipped a lot of the basic stuff and focused on the differentiation. And so those were kind of like the early stage, like the David and the Goliath, where like, man, you got to start with a story and you got to have a differentiation. You can't just win on price and you can't just be a me too of every feature. it's just not going to get people to switch.
Yeah, I think those are really key points in there. And again, it's one of these, yeah, we should know that. It's common sense, you know, but I just want to just pinpoint those for the listeners and the watchers here. You know, price. If you're going to go on price, then you're just not going to show quality. You know, people. There's always going to be somebody with a deeper pocket, always somebody with a sharp. My mentor told me 20 odd years ago, people can always sharpen the pencil lower. It just depends how far you can sharpen your pencil.
Yeah, I can always get a little more toothpaste out of the tube.
Absolutely. And once you start on price, you become a commodity. And when you become a commodity, it's really hard to differentiate yourself from there on in. You know, so I love what you said there about and the differentiation first. And this goes back to the authority-led marketing and authority-led sales. You're unique. You're the owner. You're special. You have this. You understood why you did it. Let the world know why you did it. Well, let the world know what problem you had and why you're trying to bring this solution to the world, rather than saying we're product-led, we're service-led, and we're just trying to copy it. Yes, model, but do not copy and be different. Got to be different.
Or if you copy, like intelligently copy and understand, you know, like what you're doing. And I just want to make one point about this price thing, because Bezos is famous for saying like, your margin is my opportunity. But he's also innovating. He's not just saying, hey, I'm going to do the same thing you're doing less. He's saying, no, I'm going to sell books online and they're going to be shipped to you within 3 days. Like there was a lot of product innovation there. The innovation was in the delivery and the product delivery, not just like, hey, I'm going to do everything the same, but just take a smaller margin. So I don't know. Yeah. I think that's important distinction.
That really is an important distinction. Yeah, it's the added value to a degree, isn't it? It's not just the same. There's a value add to that for the same price. So yeah, that's a really good point there. And as I said, it's getting increasingly difficult to stand above all the noise, get your message heard there today. So it's interesting, because if a founder said to you, right, I hate marketing, and I know you get these all the time, how would you shake them out of that sort of fixed mindset?
Well, I don't know. What founders are saying they hate marketing, that's like saying you hate money. I don't know. I don't know if anyone's actually saying that. I think what it is it's like younger kind of software engineers. Or sometimes you see this critique, you know, on Twitter or online, some new product will come out and they'll be like, I could build that in a weekend. It's like, yeah, but will anyone care about it? It's like, you have to have distribution. You have to have a point of view. Like you can't just build it and they will come. You have to build like the pipeline of distribution and be able to win and get in front of people. I mean, so many people can't even get the meeting, let alone win the deal. So yeah, I think that the bar for product has gone way up. I don't think we can ship tiny MVPs anymore. Like, you know, anytime someone says, haha, I could make that in a weekend, I'm like, right, but you're competing with people who've been building for 2 years and they already have 20,000 Twitter followers because they've been tweeting 3 times a day for 10 years. Like you don't understand like the sheer mass of that until you try to build something yourself and you can't get anyone to care about it. And I learned this really well. My husband and I and a third friend, Jonah, we did a Miami Hack Week. It was a week-long hackathon project in Miami. And I went because I wanted to be part of the energy in the hackathon, but I don't write code. So I was feeling a little like a faker, like a poser being there. I was like, that's okay. I'm just going to like go full stack marketer all week. I'm going to like, we recorded a daily podcast of like the experience. I got us t-shirts. Like I had to pick our name and our brand on like Monday. And then on Tuesday, I ordered t-shirts and they like arrived like Friday morning, the day of the demo. And I had a huge pitch deck. Everything was like gorgeous. We had this cool booth. And I guarantee you there were other projects there that were probably more technically interesting than ours. But no one spent any time explaining what the product did and getting you excited about it. We ended up winning first place out of like 90 projects, and we won best use of it, OpenAI. And, you know, Ryan and Jonah, they're both like technical geniuses, but they're like, oh, well, we won because of you, because like someone made like some chatbot thing that was like operating, like making satellites talk to each other. But like no one really understood what they had, like the genius of what they had built. So they didn't win. And I just felt like that was so interesting where, like this part of the story and just getting people to understand is just a huge part of running a business. You know, I tell this to younger founders, like, are you building a product or you're building a business? They're not the same thing. Pretty much anyone can ship features, but finding a business model that's simple and effective and scalable, totally different ballgame.
You know, that's a really, really good point there. You know, the fact is, and I love that analogy, and are you building a business or are you building a product? Because they do tend to stick behind the product that they're doing, the tinkerers. Yeah, the changing, moving the buttons and things like that. Yet, like you say, the story behind it, the why the founder did it is so important. And ultimately, even though everyone listening knows this, people buy from people. They're not utilizing that massive advantage that they have. So, Ray, I can't believe where the time has gone. You know,
sorry, I talked too much.
Yeah, no, we could. I think we should have part two. Really, we should do another one on part two. So, I've got this last question for you, and it's a bit of a loaded question. Again, because you've had such a great, varied career through different niches and whatnot, if you had to give young Ray, doesn't matter how old young Ray is, but if you had to give young Ray one piece of advice, no BS advice on being successful today, what would that piece of advice be?
It would just be think way bigger. I think sometimes, you know, I meet great people and I try to look at this myself. I'm like, ooh, like the baseline intelligence is there, the hard working is there, the kind of relevancy is there, the ideas are there, but just the audacity is missing. So I just think like I would probably take way bigger swings at the earlier in my career. I'd probably put myself out there way more even than I did. Cause I was just always trying to be like humble or like, I don't know what I'm doing. It's like the older you get, the more you realize no one knows what they're doing. We're all just faking it till the very, very end. I think I did a good job of putting myself in like really big ponds, like really big bodies of water. I didn't want to be, you know, there's no glory in being kind of like the most successful person in the room, so to speak. But I just think when I look at people who've really made it, they just were putting themselves out there and they're just taking much bigger swings. So that's something I'm trying to take in as I go through my 40s. Yeah, more audacious.
I think I love that. Bigger swings, be more audacious. It's a word you don't hear very often now. And I love that word. Be audacious. It's something we were told as a kid. Just go out and be audacious. I love that. So, right, if people want to get to know you more, know Matt more, what will you do? Or potentially if you could help them in their business, what's the best way of getting hold of you?
I'm kind of a Twitter girl, or an X, I guess we're calling it X these days. I'm Rachel Lambert, but it's funny, spelled funny. It's R-A-E-C-H-E-L. So you can find me on Twitter mostly. I'm on LinkedIn, but my inbox is kind of a trash fire. And then I also host events on River. I travel, whenever I travel, I host events. So I'd love to hang out with you in real life.
Fantastic. Well, I'll make sure I'll get those links. I might make sure they all go into the show notes so that people just do a one click and get straight hold of you. Well, Ray, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on today. Thank you so much for your time and some of the great insights that you've dropped with us today.
Happy to help. Thanks, Gary.
It's been brilliant. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for yet another episode of the Growth Focus podcast. No doubt you would have picked up some great insights from Ray today. So please make sure that you drop a comment in there so people can actually see what you've picked up so they can pick it up as well. But more importantly, please make sure you share, like I say, every single episode. Please make sure you share these episodes like leaders from Ray and like leaders from others who can go out and help you and others build their businesses. So until next time, keep striving, keep moving forward, and most importantly, keep being profitable. See you later. Bye-bye.